Mr. K Super Show, a podcast for the discerning music and pop culture geek, hosted by Chris Karam. Welcome to Mr. K Super Show. I'm Chris Karam, aka Chris Karam, and today we're going to talk once again about Kiss, and this time we're going to talk about an album that's celebrating, yes, folks, its 40th anniversary. I'm talking, of course, about Lick It Up. This is the record where Kiss took off their makeup and a nation went, in wonder. And to talk about this record, I brought back someone who's been on the show a couple of times before, always to talk about Kiss. He's the co-host of the Scrappy-Doo Principle and a founding creator of Kistry Science Theater, which was the funniest Kiss podcast ever, Lee Conrad. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be here.
And, you know, this is interesting because, you know, we were both around in 83. I don't know if you were into Kiss by that point, but I certainly was. In 1983, Kiss was as dead as a doornail in the United States and probably the rest of the world. Creatures of the Night, a record that should have been at least a platinum record, didn't even go gold. The tour did just equally as poorly. And the band was kind of faced with this reputation of there basically has-beens from the 70s, holdovers who still wear this goofy makeup. Nobody gives a shit anymore. What do you do? So what they did, and it proved to be a very wise move, was they took off their makeup and revealed themselves to the world, and it kind of got their career back on track. I mean, it never went back to the 1977-78 levels of hysteria, but it did get them back as a touring band. I think, you know, Lick It Up went gold and platinum within a reasonable time. Lee, what is your take on, Kiss taking off their makeup in 1983 and the whole, you know, unmasking thing?
Well, for me, at that time, I was a youngin'. Lick It Up, I can remember being one of the earliest Kiss songs I was probably exposed to without really knowing that it was the same band that wore the makeup.
Right.
Because you had all those music video shows and MTV and all that. So it's like, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
It's ironic that they took the makeup off in an era when music became a visual medium, you know, more so. It's kind of ironic because you got that taste of them in the makeup with Creatures the year prior, with the music video for I Love It Loud. And it's like, ooh, that looks kind of neat. But at the same time, yeah, you're right. The perception is these are has-beens now. These guys don't.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit the aesthetic anymore because, you know, hair metal's moving in a different direction.
Right.
You know, they're wearing makeup, you know, examples right. Like Twisted Sister, Motley Crue, yeah. Cinderella. But they're not hiding their personas.
Right.
Right. So it was interesting that this album, having it gone platinum, and this is the first album that goes platinum for Kiss since Dynasty.
Yes.
But at the same time, like, it's the album that sort of sets the point where they're chasing the trend rather than setting the trend.
Yes. And, you know, the interesting thing was back in 1983, and you probably have seen this on videos, Lee, the only press they could really get in the U.S. was these evangelical preachers coming after them. And they were, and, you know, if you, there's clips of it. They're on Entertainment Tonight, the preacher saying, Kiss has to be born again, and they need to bring, you have to recognize Jesus. And Gene's like, these people are small-time bozos. And Paul's like, I'll go to their mass if they come to see my show. I don't care, you know. And Entertainment Tonight, whoever the commentator was, made an interesting comment that they felt that the preachers and these televangelists or whatever were doing it equally for the publicity. Because their ministries or whatever were dwindling in membership. So let's latch on to the satanic rock band. You know, they, in fact, Gene and Paul were even on this obscure late night CBS show called CBS News Night Watch, which must have been on at like 2 a.m. or something. And I'll never forget it because Gene and Paul were on and they were addressing the controversy. Of course, they come on in full makeup and costume, their Creatures regalia. And the guy says, well, you know, when you send out messages to fire your songs, what are you trying to say to my teenage daughter? Gene's like, well, she were a little older. I'd tell her to come to my hotel room. And the guy's like, and the guy doesn't even get mad at him. He's just like, that's fair. But yeah, this is, you know, long before Me Too, really. Gene is exactly but this is all the publicity they could get. So they had to take out the one, you know, card in their deck. If they played this,
come on, you could say it. They're ace in the hole.
Ace in the hole, yeah.
Come on, I mean,
I'll try not to. But you know, they had to, because, and if they played this and it didn't work, they were done.
Yeah,
as we know. But you made a good point. They were following the trends now, and they even admitted. Paul Stanley even admitted in his book, you know, if Bon Jovi hired a certain producer, they wanted to hire him. If they hired a movie, a video director, they'd hire him. But what choice did they have? I mean, but the funny thing is, like you said, it's true. You've got Kiss taking it off, Motley Crue's putting it on, Twisted Sister's putting it on. Even like bands like Rat, who technically didn't wear like theatrical makeup, you know, they were all glamming it up, and
yeah,
they all kind of bought into that aesthetic.
Well, there's the theatrics of it all, right? Like, yeah. I mean, Alice Cooper really kind of set the bar with that too.
But he was away at that point. He was kind of, you know, trying to get to come to terms with his drug addiction and alcoholism. So he stepped away for a while.
Yeah. But I'm thinking about bands like Iron Maiden.
Oh,
who
yeah.
Who had Eddie. So you had a mascot on stage.
Where did I read this? It might have been, someone was saying, I don't feel where I read this, that they said Iron Maiden were probably putting out a better theatrical show by the mid-80s than Kiss was.
Oh, yeah.
And I agree. I mean, if you've ever seen, Live After Death or any of their videos from the 80s, they were putting a lot of money into their stage show. I mean, you know, there was flames. And I would say, you know, by comparison, Kiss, all they were doing by the mid-80s was just, okay, here's this huge giant logo we've got that's, you know, and we've got some flames and columns, and we've got some, you know, junk.
But they did have a tank.
Yes, they did, and they recycled it for the store.
They recycled that. I find that interesting that they actually took the tank on the Lick It Up tour.
Well, nobody saw the Creatures tour, so they probably think half the people are going to see this aren't going to care. You know, I mean, and the hardcore fans will just come anyway. But let's get into the record. This record is the sister album, I guess you'd say, to Lick It Up. It was produced by the same producer, Michael James Jackson, along with, you know, Paul and Gene. And it more or less just kind of continues on from where Creatures Love. But I agree with Paul Stanley, though. He said, I think people listen with their eyes, because he felt Creatures was a better album, yet Lick It Up was the one that got more accolades and more sales.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think, you know, it's an album that I don't think about a lot. But when I do, I'm like, oh, it's a good, solid album. I don't think it's like a great record. I mean, but there's certainly going to be worse albums down the pike, you know, in the next few years or whatever.
Well, I might be contradicting my thoughts from when we talked about it on History Science Theater originally, but like with this, I'm pretty certain, like, one of the comments I have about this record is that it's the beginning. Well, it becomes a little more prominent, noticing that you have the alternating tracks of like who does the vocals, right?
Yeah.
So you got Paul's song, pretty strong. Gene song, it's okay. Get to Paul, strong song. Gene, it's okay. But Gene is also moving into this era where his vocals sounds like he's shouting like up top to get his voice out. He doesn't, you know, do like what he would have done for like God of Thunder or Christine 16.
Yeah.
It's like up here, and he's got to sing like this. Like, why do you have to scream it? You don't have to scream it. Paul's fine.
I guess he was looking for a new vocal identity in the 80s. I guess. Who knows?
It's a weird time for Gene, I think, because also is. He's dabbling into acting as well at this point.
Yeah, which is kind of a good thing that they took off their makeup, because now he could pursue acting. And of course, you know, the following year in 1984, he makes one of the greatest movies of all time with Runaway. Ramsey!
I wouldn't do that, Ramsey!
You're right. And like, you know, one thing that like they made one comment that I think is really true. When they took the makeup off, Paul Stanley was like freed. Like the weight was off his shoulders. he didn't really change all that much. He was still Paul Stanley, running around the stage like a madman, shrieking and hollering and hooting. And Gene, on the other hand, was so enmeshed in his demon persona that
he didn't have the makeup on anymore.
He was still making the faces. He was still, you know, walking a certain way. You can't see it, thank God. But, you know, he would, and he even admitted he had no idea what he was doing. He had to really, it took him, I think, a couple of tours before he finally got his bearings and kind of carved out a new identity for himself. But let's get into the track by track.
Sure.
And we'll get into
Exciter.
Yes, track one, side one, Exciter, which was written by Paul Stanley and Vinnie Vincent.
Oh, Vinnie.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is going to be a Vinnie fest because Vinnie not only plays on this album throughout, he co-wrote 8 of the 10 songs. By the way, in point of fact, Kiss is not the first band to start off an album with a track called Exciter. Judas Priest did it in 1978 on Stained Glass.
Oh, wow.
He wasn't helping for leather. Either way, it's one of those two albums.
Wow.
Lee, your thoughts on Exciter?
I like it. As an album opening, it's not bad. But I mean, you don't want to lead with your absolutely strongest material. So, but it kind of gets you into the rhythm of what you feel of what the album's going to be for you. So, yeah, I dig it. Paul's vocals are strong. You know, Vinny's licks are good.
Speaking of that, I don't forget where I read this. I mean, like you, I've read a ton of Kiss stuff over the years, books, magazines, whatever. Supposedly, and it's not credited officially, that supposedly Rick Derringer played the lead solo on this. And I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I don't know why he would, because at this point, Vinny is firmly entrenched as a member, although, you know, technically he never signed his contract, but
he's just weaseled himself in there, but he doesn't want to be locked down.
Well, no, he you know, I read this, I was doing a little research for this, and like he wanted percentages of gross profits. And, you know, Gene and Paul was like, here's your salary, you know, you get nothing, take it or leave it. Yeah, Exciter is a decent song. It's a good way to start the album. I think it's appropriately enough, you know, it's a nice kind of hard chugging rocker. It's not an exceptional song, but it's, you know, it's like a good album starter. I mean, when you're following up an album like Creatures, you really got to keep the momentum going. And I think they do with this song, but they're going to take it into even darker territory with track two, Not for the Innocent, composed by Gene Simmons and Vinnie Vincent. Lee, your thoughts on Not for the Innocent?
Oh, I first thing that comes to mind is the lip sync Kiss Impostors video that my co-host Dez did back in the day. And he had this like mesh netting set up in his garage, and he's like hanging off of it and lip syncing to Gene's. Ow! Oh, you know, it's just, they went hog wild on recreating this album.
Were they doing it in makeup, or was it?
No. That was the thing with the Kiss Impostors, for any of you who used would follow History Science Theater and know anything about the Kiss Impostors history, the air band that we did throughout high school, was that we tried to emulate every era of Kiss. And so if Kiss took the makeup off, we did the shows with the makeup off. Finding appropriate attire, however, was always a fun challenge. Yeah, this song, Not for the Innocent. Yeah, it's okay. It's not necessarily one that I gravitate towards right away. But I mean, with a title like that, it's definitely a Gene tune, right?
Yep.
But yeah, darker territory. Yeah, it makes you wonder. It's like, should this song have been on Creatures instead?
You know, I'm going to say that when I think of this song in terms of a music video, I picture Gene in his makeup. This to me is a makeup. And in point of fact, it's not like I'm, you know, on the in court here or something. In point of fact, Lee Conrad, on the Creatures of the Night box set, there's a demo for this song.
Oh, okay.
What's interesting is that the demo, the verses alternate between Gene and Paul. I think the lyrics are basically the same, but yeah, Gene sings a verse, Paul sings a verse, and it's kind of, it's interesting, but like, I'm glad that like they decided for the final version, which obviously is on this record, to just have Gene do it. This to me is a gene. You're right. I think this could have been on Creatures. This might have actually been more appropriate on Creatures. You know, they, and I think they probably could have, you know, slotted in another track. Although Creatures is a fine album as is, or as was. But yeah, it's, I like it. It's definitely a good Gene song. Almost like the end of that. Almost like one little trickle from the makeup era is kind of coming out in this brave new world.
Or I propose this idea to you that maybe it's a preview of things to come for Revenge later, because it could be a little teaser lead into Unholy.
You know, it's probably more in line with that song. You're right. That's a good that's why we pay the big bucks to have people like you on.
Yay!
Yeah,
double my salary. Nothing of nothing is nothing.
You get as much as I do.
Good.
All right, so yeah, you know how that goes. You don't go into podcasting for the money unless you're like Cassius Morris and you hit the big time.
Oh, he's doing so well.
Yeah, I'm proud.
I'm so proud of that kid.
You know, when I first heard about Creatures of the Net, you know, at the time he was still pretty young. He was probably like 12 or 13 years old.
Oh yeah.
And I heard that this little punk kid was doing a Kiss podcast. I'm like, who the hell do I want to listen to some little punk kid? But I listened to it, you know, and it's funny because he's got the chipmunk voice in the early episodes. And, you know, it's like any podcast that's starting out, it takes a little while to find its way. But he got to a point where he got really good at it really fast. And, you know, I was on his show a few times talking about Kiss and talking about Black Sabbath. And, you know, Cassius, man, you know, we love you. You know, keep doing what you do. At least you get paid for it.
He hustles, though, man. He hustles hard.
And he's reaping the rewards.
Yeah.
Let's go to the title track, third song, side one, a song that has become, believe it or not, a classic rock staple. I mean, you'll hear this song not quite as much as you'll hear Rock and Roll Night or Detroit Rock City, but you'll hear it. And what are your thoughts on Lick It Up, the title
track? I like Lick It Up. It's simple. It gets to the point. The music video is gloriously cheesy and awesome. You know, the whole post-apocalyptic thing. And of course, the only thing, everything is in ruins, but all the hot women are still there.
Yes. That is important, because how can we look forward to the post-apocalyptic world if the girls aren't hot?
Yeah. But apparently all they eat are condiments. Because
you just see them squeezing like these tubes of like what looks to be like cream cheese or something like
cheese whiz in a can, mustard, ketchup, mayo.
The post-apocalypse is going to have some great music, some hot chicks, and some questionable looking guys wearing tight leather outfits and makeup that's scarier than their theatrical makeup.
Yeah. Oh, just watching them walk down that street,
yeah.
And like Eric, you can just see the size differences.
Yeah. You know, Vinny is not intimidating. I mean, I'm not a tough guy by any stretch of the imagination, but if Vinny Vincent came up to me, I'd be like, get out of my way. Yeah. Yeah. No,
I find it funny that this, like, I mean, yeah, it's a great classic 80s Kiss song. And honestly, you know, it's no wonder that they still, like, they played it during the reunion as well.
Yeah, they brought it back after a couple. They did bring it back towards the end of Ace and Peter's, you know, which is kind of strange seeing those guys play Lick It Up. But, you know, Lick It Up does not have a very demanding. It doesn't actually even have a solo, really. It's, you know, which is kind of odd.
Da 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 da. It's better live. I think it's a much better song live.
Yeah, they stretch it out, and they even work in a little bit of Won't Get Fooled Again into it sometimes, or, you know. But yeah, it's a great song. I mean, it's, you know, it's wise for them to pick this as the title track. You know, it's not a, it's as Paul stands, it's about proper nutrition and eating well. And, you know, yeah.
Just the one thing I love is that, you know, after a good show, you want some ice cream. And if you take some ice cream and you just lick it right up,
you can have steak and cheesecake.
Yeah, steak and cheesecake.
And I'm sure they did in more ways than one, you know. Gene brought, you know, yeah, bought the steak at the butcher and got the cheesecake backstage. But anyway,
don't they eat raw meat in the video too?
Yeah, I mean, they're like, yeah, they're raw meat, man. Meat,
yeah,
meat. Yeah. I was actually thinking that at one point they cook it, but I think that's in All Hell's Breaking Loose when he's got the like.
Oh,
the
he's got the
turkey
he's got the
leg in his
turkey
hand,
leg.
and then he holds it over a fire, which, you know, what you would do if it's if you wanted to heat it up a little or cook it.
Right.
Cooking with
Right.
Kiss will be our next podcast.
That'll be a fun one. Paul's a pretty good chef.
Yeah, it certainly looks it. Great song, you know, great song. It definitely, you know, it was probably a good thing to call some Lick It Up, because it's kind of like, what the hell's that mean, you know? And, you know, when you put it against the stark contrast of that plain white background and them just in their street clothes, so to speak, although I believe Vinny is wearing a wig in that photo.
Is he?
Yeah, I believe I've heard that. It does look like a strange hairstyle for him. But then again, Strange and Vinny kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you got to allude to something in regards to Kiss that's iconic. And Gene's tongue is one of those things.
Yeah,
he's sticking it out on the cover.
Yeah, and as soon as you see, even if you didn't see the Kiss logo.
Yeah.
As soon as you see that tongue, you know who it is.
You know who it is. Yeah.
But it was, you know, again, it was Kiss has always been visually oriented. And that was a wise move. Just a plain photo. But stick the tongue out for, like, you know, kind of like brand identification. Good move.
Yep.
Good move. Track four, side one, is Young and Wasted.
That's another banger.
Yeah. Lee, your thoughts?
Oh, I know this one gets a high ranking from the boys from the KST, because, you know, it's one of those things where it's that's an Eric Carr highlight, right?
Well, it would become one.
Would become one, yeah.
Because Gene sings it on the album, and I think, and actually did it on that tour as well, the Lick It Up tour.
Yeah, but it's a good one. Just that riff, the opening, that da 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 da, like, especially with the visual they have on stage with the tank.
Yeah,
you know, I can only imagine what the lights might have looked like during that. You know,
right?
Because you could have done some really cool, like, rapid blinking stuff going on, or to replicate, you know, a rapid gunfire or something, because that riff really lends itself to it, like that.
Yeah, it's relentless. It's definitely pounding. It's driving, and it's interesting that, you know, on the Lick It Up tour, Gene did it. I mean, it's his song, so of course he's saying it. But then for some reason, they just threw Eric Carr a bone. Maybe they think, well, he only gets to sing one song per set, so let's give him another one.
Yeah.
And he, you know, it's interesting because Gene, you know, like you said, Gene's doing his shouting kind of over the top singing. Whereas when Eric Carr does it, it's got a lot more gravel to it. It's like, you know,
yeah.
Like, he's really like pushing his vocals, his vocal range, such as it was, to, you know, the outer limits. But it, you know, it was definitely a highlight of the Animalize live uncensored video.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, we'll probably be talking. I guess we'll talk about that next year on Animalize 40.
Oh yeah, that'll be God, 40 years.
And, you know, that album is like a saga unto itself with all the twists and turns that happen. But and we're gonna go to the final track on side one.
Mm.
Give Me More, written by Paul Stanley and Vinnie Vincent. Lee, your thoughts on Give Me More?
It's a little forgettable, to be honest. I mean, it's filler. I feel it's filler on this, you know, we need to finish out side B somehow, but get them to come over to the second side. So
yeah,
give me more. But it just feels like a little bit of they took what leftovers they had from the previous four tracks and mashed them into this one. And because they all have about the same sort of thing, you know. You know, and then and then a little bit of those, like, harmonized vocals that they do, like that, and then Paul sort of rapping the chorus. I don't know. It's weird.
You know, I do have one issue with this song.
Only one?
Well, just one. Well, I have more than one. But okay. The main issue is the ambiguity of the title. Give me more what?
Anything.
Give me more, you know, lollipops, ice cream.
Well, I happen to have the booklet here in front of me.
Uh-oh.
Let's see what the lyrics say.
Oh, boy. The
Live wire on the loose. White fire, gotta move. Hot blood, need your love. Hard as rock, can't get enough. Want to feel you deep inside, pumping through my veins. feel you to the core. Let me take you through the night. Heaven knows no pain. Open up the door. Give me more. So it's, again, like every other Kiss song, it's about, you know,
a hospital.
What?
It's about being his blood is pumping hot. He's got to go to the emergency room for treatment.
Oh, sure.
And of course, you know, the nurse unbuttoned my, you know. Wait, I'm jumping.
She reached inside my trousers and she pulled out.
Yeah, I know. It's like, this is, I don't know if they started it on this tour, but I know on Animalize Live and Censored is when he starts talking about, like, I went to the doctor the other day, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But
he never really did that during the makeup era, did he, when they did Dr.
No,
Love?
No, they didn't. You know, he
kept, or Love Gun.
He more or less kept it to the point back in those days. Besides, I think back then they were more conscious of the fact they had their audience was skewing younger, so maybe they didn't want to. This song is, yeah, it's okay. It's like it's decent. It's not the worst song they've ever. It's not the best song they've ever done. But you know,
it's raunchy. It's raunchy.
Well, no, really, get out. This is Kiss. This is Kiss. So they've got to, you know, you got to have kind of like a chugging, you know, up tempo song to end the side, because, you know, this is back in the days of the LP. Well, although the LP is now back upon us, as you know.
And cassettes.
Yeah. And believe it or not, I think Cheap Trick put out one of their records on 8-track.
Oh, that's ballsy.
Yeah.
Who has an 8-track player now that works?
And who would want an 8-track player? I mean, I was around when 8-track players were a thing. And honestly, the only thing I can see why they were big at one point was because of the fact that, you know, before cassettes, you could take them in your car. They're, you know, they had 8-track decks in cars. I mean, but yeah, this is an okay song. It ends the side one in pretty good form. And we're going to jump on to side two of the Lick It Up album. And of course, we're going to start off with the song All Hell's Breaking Loose. Now, this one is probably, to my knowledge, well, actually, Love Theme from Kiss, I believe, is credited to all the band members. But this is actually credited to Eric Karas, Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, and Vinnie Vincent. Lee, what are your thoughts? And this is also, by the way, the second single and video. There's only two videos, so this is the second one from the Lick It Up album. Lee, what are your thoughts on All Hell's Breaking Loose?
I like this one. It's fun. I mean, it incorporates Paul's. I mean, my understanding is that the whole rap part, you know, at the beginning, you know, when he's talking about street hustler walks up to me, blah blah blah, mind of my own business, like that was never intended to be there. And that it was sort of thrown. I can't remember who's like suggested that they put that in.
Yeah.
Because it was just supposed to be this long lead in. And then the rest of the song, essentially. So it's funny because that part has become kind of an iconic thing of like, if you go to the live shows, you hear Paul do his rap to the audience. And that's what this feels like. And it's fun. It's a nice way to open up the second side of the record. And there's that fun attitude that they throw in with this song. And I haven't got any bad things to say about this one.
In the early 90s, I read this. I bought this Kiss fan magazine, surprise, surprise. And
yeah.
They were talking about the videos. And Eric Carr talked explicitly about this song. Apparently, he came up with the riff. Because he did play guitar and he did write music. And he brought it to Paul thinking this was going to be like a kind of Led Zeppelin type thing, like Kashmir. And I can kind of listen to it. Like, yeah, it does kind of have that sort of feel of, you know. And Paul or whoever decided to put the rap. And Eric Carr was like, what? You're gonna, but then I listened to it and I realized, oh, it makes it better. So it was a good move. I read between the lines, thanks, asshole, for ruining my song. I'm envisioning this as, you know, a Led Zeppelin kind of epic, and you're making this rap. I do like the song. The video is also kind of a time capsule. It's, you know, them kind of like, again, the post-apocalyptic world. They're kind of like walking around through these desolate areas, and there's knives being thrown at them, and there's, you know, of course, great looking girls
and circus midgets.
circus midgets, food. I mean, you know, everything that an 80s rock band could want. Interestingly, this was directed by Martin Cahan or Martin Cahan, who also directed a video that came out not long after this by Motley Crue called Too Young to Fall in Love.
Oh.
Watch the videos back to back. They're essentially sister videos. He basically took the template for what he did with Kiss. They're walking around. It's weird stuff's going on. Motley, of course, is made up in their, you know, shout out the devil garb.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the song. I think it's good. The, you know, the rap isn't that bad. There's, you know, there'd be worse attempts at rap down the line. Read My Body, anybody? we'll get into that later in the Hot in the Shade trash retrospective. Mm-hmm. No, I like this song. The video is a time capsule, but the song itself is pretty. I'm not exactly sure why all four band members were credited. I mean, you know, Eric Carr, maybe he brought the riff and then they all kind of embellished it, but it's very rare, especially in the 80s, that you would get a song that was credited to all four members of the band, you know, but
maybe they all contributed a rap line.
Oh my God.
You know, we ain't always winners, but this is the life we choose.
Hey, boy, I'm changing. We ever gonna lose?
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. But it's a good
This is the only video where that has, I mean, this also has a sword fight in it, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, exactly. This was tough stuff. You know, this is like, the only thing missing from this video was Arnold Schwarzenegger as Conan going, now we had the lamentations of the women.
Yes.
Come with me.
No, they wouldn't be able to get him. They'd get Mark Singer, the Beastmaster.
Yeah, yeah, they were on low budget back then. I mean, you know, this is clearly a low budget video, but, you know, and I think this is when, like Gene had said, or maybe it was around the time of Animalize, you know, we were making these videos that were like remakes of Raiders of the Lost Ark. We're not, you know, we're not really actors. Well, you know, he didn't say the band weren't actors, but
yeah,
but good song. And so that leads into the next song, A Million to One, which was written by Paul Stanley and Vinnie Vincent. Lee, your thoughts on A Million to One?
I really like this one, actually. It's one of those things where it's not quite a ballad.
Yeah.
Right.
It's too a little too fast to be a ballad, but not fast enough to be a fast song.
But it's a great, like the tone of it.
Mm.
I really like. Just that, you know, with the chorus, especially if you're a guy, if you're a single guy, or if you've just gone through a breakup or something like that, it's a great tune to get your emotions out with. And, I don't know, it's just, you know, the build in with it, like that low volume until it builds into that punctuated. Yeah. Bow, bow.
I'm surprised they didn't release this as a single. This might have stood the test of time, or might have gotten them some airplay or some video airplay.
Yeah, you could almost pair this as like almost pair this with "I Still Love You" from Creatures, in a way.
Well, you know, interesting life, they're getting to a bit of a formula, and they'll do this on Animalize as well. The second song on side two is either a ballad or a slower paced song that's about, you know, the next album.
Love Lost. Paul is always looking for love.
I love your Paul family. Yeah, you know, like on the next album, it's Thrills in the Night, which is about, you know, it's about a girl. Who during the day she's good, but at night she's bad.
She's nasty.
I should be saving all these bad imitations for the Animalize episode next year. But anyway, yeah, it's a good song. I mean, it might have actually been a strong single, but for some reason they only seem to put out two songs from this album.
Well, what was on the B side for those 45s when they put them out?
You know, I don't know.
That'd be something to see, because if anything, maybe it ended up on a B side.
That's certainly possible. We'll have to look that up at some point.
Somebody out there knows, and they'll throw it in the comments.
Oh, of course they will. Of course they will. So we go to the next song. One of the more infamous songs, although this song certainly had, it had some legs. I mean, it stayed around for quite a while. I'm talking about Gene Simmons' politically correct ode to everything fits like a glove. Lee.
Mm-hmm. Well, He must have seen Spinal Tap, right? I mean, like, how much how close is this to, you know, smell the glove, right? Like, fits like a glove. I mean, anybody who knows their innuendo knows what this is about, especially when it fits Gene singing it. And that whole thing with it's like a hot knife through butter.
And they put this weird effect on the vocal to like stretch it out and kind of make And yeah, I mean, but this song, I mean, I'm presuming they did it on the Lookout Tour. This song stuck around to like the early 90s. I remember they did it on the Hot in the Shade tour.
Well, Gene, again, is still floundering for his identity. Gene is about sex.
He can still be a sex crazed, you know, fiend.
Yeah.
That never goes out of style. So, no. You know, in today's day and age, it's, you know, probably frowned upon by certain elements of society. Not myself, but. Yeah,
maybe he just felt comfortable playing this as one he just knew, because isn't it like the
it does have a really interesting kind of chugging riff, and it does kind of keep the momentum going. But you know, Gene is not gonna win any points with although the National Organization of Women apparently, you know, did want him to lecture at one of their, you know, because that's Kiss Exposed, but. Yeah, I mean, but you know, it's kind of like it's the 80s Kiss is a strange beast, and it just seems to mutate. Like, it doesn't really stabilize until Bruce Kulick comes on board with
Asylum. Oh yeah,
you know, yeah. Bruce kind of like was the right guy at the right time, but we're jumping ahead.
I do like the little bit there from, you know, when you get that opening riff of the song and there's the pause, and then Paul's with his little grunt.
Yeah,
because you can see it. You can just right in the camera. Ooh,
yeah, yep, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
It's
and that was written just by Gene, by the way. No Vinnie Vincent on this one.
No Vinnie.
We lead into the next track. Another song sung by Gene and just solely composed by Gene. I'm gonna dance all over your face.
See, now we're getting into the what's left over of in the album. Yeah. Like it technically, I think, kind of starts with "Fits Like a Glove," and then it's dance all over your face
because it's starting Gene. To peter out a little.
What?
No pun intended. It's starting to peter out a little bit.
Yes.
I had to say that. You know, we don't want to offend Peter Criss.
No. But it's like you get three Gene vocals now in a row.
Yeah, that's weird. Album. You never see that on any album other than this. I don't know why. I mean, maybe Paul just wanted to get his stuff up front. Okay, yeah. And let Gene just have the back end of the album. Maybe
that's what it feels like. It just loses steam at this point. It's dance all over your face.
Like, yeah, I'm going to. Yeah, this is Spinal Tap would look at this and go, "We're not doing that."
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not much to say about it, really. It's, you know, it is what it is. It's got an interesting riff, but Gene's just like apparently having broken up with her or whatever, or you know, I'm gonna dance all over your face. Well, you know, classy Gene, real classy.
What does it say?
Oh my god. No.
Baby, I know it's a jungle out there. Well, if you can play it cool, I can play it debonair. You were warm, but there was an inner ice, and baby, you were rolling the dice. Well, if I told you once, I told you twice. Hey, listen, babe, there's trouble in paradise. Well, I found a lipstick stain of your kiss, and you can sink your teeth into this, bitch.
Whoa! Now you gotta.
I'm gonna.
You know, he was just mouthing the words.
Oh, did I cut out?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, let me do that again. I'm going to dance all over your face.
You know, this may not sound like much now, but for Gene to say something like bitch, that was kind of a big deal back then because, you know, this was right around the era where the Parents Music Resource Center was starting to, you know, listen to these. Apparently, you know, if you hear the word bitch on a record, it'll mar you for life. Considering what we have today, it's quaint, but... Yeah, he's trying to be aggressive and he's trying to be Mr. Big Bad. And unfortunately, sometimes when Gene tries to be Big Bad, he just comes off as Big Bad Wolf, you know, not scary at all.
He's a lot of hot air.
But yeah, and that's what the song is, a lot of hot air. There's not much more to say about it, really.
No, and just from that brief stint of reading the lyrics, it's like, well, what can I rhyme with what, and what cliche-ish phrases can I pull from a late night TV guide?
Yeah, remember that? Remember that? I think it was you guys who did that. You did like a whole riff on Gene reading like, stuff out of comic books and TV guide and coming like, murder, she's murder and high. You can almost like picture like I mean, I used to subscribe to TV Guide when I was a lot younger. And I used to read it from top to bottom to see what was on that week. And that sounds like some black and white movie that would air at 11:30 at night on your local TV. And now tonight on
The Naked
the
City, I think, was one of them that he
Yeah,
plucked the
yeah.
title right out of the TV
That
guide.
could be like an interesting we could do that as an episode down the line.
6 foot
Gene,
cardboard skeleton. That was the
I
one we
remember that
wanted
one.
to
That was
hear.
that you guys always made me laugh. We could do like a whole thing about Kiss songs that we think were based on movie of the week titles or TV guide. That would be hilarious. Well, maybe we'll do that for a future show. The final track on this album and the final track on side two, written by Gene and Vinnie Vincent, is And on the Eighth Day. Lee, what do you think about And on the Eighth Day?
This is a sad attempt at an anthem song, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I was just thinking that. Clearly, they are trying to do a new anthem for the new Kiss. This is the new unmasked Kiss. So here's on the yeah. I've seen bootlegs that have this song and then slash Boys Are Gonna Rock. So I wonder if like Boys Are Gonna Rock or some of the music for that was submitted by Vinny to the band and maybe their demo or maybe he just called it Boys Are Gonna Rock. I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you, Lee. This is sounds like a very contrived attempt at an anthem. It's not a bad song, but by this point, the album is kind of like it doesn't quite like limp to the finish line, but it doesn't exactly exalt in triumph either.
It doesn't stick the landing so much. Like, if you were to close a live show with this, like, you'd have to add a lot in terms of the production value to really.
You'd have to have bombs going off all over the place and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think overall this record is a solid record. It's a good record. It's not as good as Creatures, but it's certainly them back doing straight on rock, no bullshit. It did better, obviously, than Creatures. It went gold and eventually platinum, and it set the stage for the next few records to do reasonably well. Like I said, although they would never hit the heights that they did in the 70s, but who could?
Now, you gotta think, like, with the discography they already had behind them at that point, it's like no one had made that kind of success that fast and consistently
Oh yeah.
up to that time. So the fact that they have this lull, it's like it was kind of inevitable. You can't maintain that momentum for that long,
No one can. The
you
fact that
know?
they were able to kind of come back a little bit with this non-makeup version of the band and have some relative degree of success was pretty cool. I mean, it's not going to be like the way, say, Aerosmith would come back
Oh,
really huge in the late 80s. And I talked about that with Julian Gill a while back. We had a lot of fun doing that. That was last year, actually. But interestingly enough, they started the tour in September of 1983. I'm sorry, October 11th in Portugal. And as the story goes, the promoters in Portugal did not promote this as Kiss Without Makeup. They put, pictures of the band in makeup. I think it might have even been Ace, but I'm not sure. So when they walked out on stage,
Nobody knew
without
who they
makeup,
were.
people were looking at them like, who the hell? And in fact, there's a couple of songs from the show on the Kissology DVD. I think it's volume two or volume three. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's like, I could see that. Think about it. Even like a general average rock fan who maybe doesn't follow Kiss fanatically, you go to the show and like, what? Where the hell's the makeup? Who's that guy? Who's that short guy on guitar?
It's like they didn't pay for the marketing required for it. So it's like,
Yeah, or
we're getting
the
Kiss. Do you need any pro pictures? It's like, oh no, we know Kiss. We got Kiss. We
well, especially well, you have to wonder like in foreign countries if they if the language barrier gets in the way or they just figure, well, it's Kiss. Everybody knows Kiss. But they said it was fine, and this is a prime example of like the clips they do have of Gene. He's pulling out all his makeup faces, whereas Paul's just like, I'm free. And he's just running around the stage being a madman. Vinny and Eric are fine. You know, they don't seem to be too affected by it. I don't, you know, they're two members with the least amount of time in the makeup. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean,
Paul just feels like he's like, I don't have those boots to wear anymore. I can jump. I can fly. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing too, like they don't have those heavy outfits anymore. Like they're much lighter outfits. I mean, their outfits are more in line with like the glam rock bands. I mean, like they almost look more like Van Halen than they do Kiss.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, they were following the trends and they weren't starting them anymore. And they did do an unmasking on MTV in September of 1983. But here's the funny part. Is it on in prime time when everybody can see it? No, it's on at like 11:30 at night after a rerun of a Van Halen concert.
Yeah.
So clearly, like, I mean, so if they were doing this live, clearly there was like maybe J.J. Jackson, a small crew, but J.J., the late, great J.J. Jackson, who was one of the original MTV VJs, he introduces them and they all talk. And Gene tellingly says, you know, I mean, I feel perfectly fine. I don't feel nervous at all. You know, and you realize he is nervous. He's just trying to hide it. But and then, you know, Eric Carr says very little. He makes a little joke about Paul. And then Paul's like, hey, Paulie, tell him about the video we're going to have out. And, you know,
they get to be VJs for a brief stint. And everyone goes, what?
But you know, Paul like made a good point on one of the Kissology videos. It was a commentary track where he said, here we are in masking and two of the guys in the band, you know, Eric's only been in the band a couple of years and Vinny just joined.
Yeah.
So, you know, even the unmasking was kind of, in his opinion, anticlimactic, although, you know, it was pretty cool for its time. I mean, they were at least able
because to get MTV. It's like technically Peter and Ace had already done it.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't think Ace hadn't yet.
No?
No, he not yet. No, he left in 83, so he was still kind of maintaining. He, you know, I don't think we really saw what Ace looked like till 86 or 87 when Fraley's Comet came out.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
I mean, okay. I don't think he was hiding. I just don't think he, you know, Peter, you know, came out in 80, 81 or whatever with when he did the Out of Control album. And then you realize, hey, look, it's Kenny Rogers.
Yeah. was that pre or post Donahue?
Oh, long before Donahue, yeah. I think when he was on Donahue, he was talking about that imposter guy, right?
Yeah, well, the imposter was on the show, right?
Yeah.
Claiming to be
that was
him. Living under a bridge.
He was on the Tom Snyder show by himself, and he was promoting, you know, Out of Control. And you're thinking, this is the guy who used to wear the makeup and Kiss?
Yeah.
But, you know, weird. He was – and unfortunately, like, you know, Peter felt like they – Kiss were trying to sabotage him. It's like, well, you put out a record that, let's face it, not too many people were really interested in.
Yeah.
Poor Peter. But anyway, yeah, this record, you know, it reestablished Kiss. It sold, you know, relatively well. And, you know, it's an album that, like I said, I don't listen to it a lot, but I listened to it today, obviously. And it's, you know, it holds up pretty well. It's got some of the 80s, you know, flash, and it's got, you know, it's got Vinnie Vincent for the first and only time as a full member of the band. I mean, he's really, you know, you can say what you want about Vinnie. He's a flake. He's done this. He's done that. He's got a questionable moral character, but he kind of injected some life into this band at a time when they needed it.
And he would do it again later for Revenge.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he never learned his lesson though. And
no,
almost immediately fell out of favor with Gene and Paul, and then spent the next 10 years suing them for various things and losing, I think, in most cases. And he seems to surface now whenever he needs money. I feel bad for the people who bought his box set or whatever and never got
anything. It. Yeah.
I mean, look at what happened to, you know, poor Chris Sinzak from Decibel Geek when he tried to, you know, he gets Vinny on his show and he kind of establishes a friendship with them and then Vinny pulls his crap again. And, you know, so after sad. This, yeah, and after the, well, there's a really kind of, it's kind of funny in retrospect, tour story where one night Vinny went to do a solo and he kept doing a solo and he kept doing a solo to the point where Paul Stanley had to walk on stage and maybe Vinny didn't sing lead guitar and he had to like cut him off.
Yeah.
Apparently.
The metaphorical cane yoink off the stage.
And apparently after the show, Vinnie Vincent had no qualms about going up one side of Paul and down the other and tearing up a new asshole. Hey, don't ever do that to me again. And, you know, he acted like he was an equal in that band. And let's face it, we know that after Ace and Peter left, you join that band, you're an employee.
Yeah.
Bruce was like the model employee. Come in, do your job, keep your head hung low, don't make waves.
Yeah.
But Vinny, you know, Vinny, of course, and then, of course, Vinny gets fired or leaves, whatever, doesn't sign his contract. He goes on to Vinnie Vincent Invasion for like a couple of records, and then his band dumps him and becomes Slaughter. And he actually ends up having a hit, which had to be a slap in the face. And then, you know, Vinny kind of, he seems to have had various attempts at a comeback, but he's just got that weird personality that just, you know.
He's self-sabotaging is what he is.
Yeah, he is. He could have had a really big career. I think he would have been perfect for, like, he, you know, you look at Vinnie Vincent and the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. I mean, they had that hair metal, that big metal sound, and but yeah. He blew it. You know, he just couldn't sustain it. And, you know, Gene and Paul took pity on him in the early 90s. They heard he was, you know, hurting financially and needed some money. So they reached out to him, and it seemed like for a while they were getting along and writing songs, and he seemed to be kind of happy. And then, of course, he got cocky again, thinking, well, I'm back, you know. Well, you know, yeah. I did a couple of songs on the Kiss record. But, yeah, Look It Up. I mean, you have any other thoughts on Look It Up, Lee?
I have two copies of it.
Oh, okay.
I have the original phonogram CD release.
Oh, yeah.
That came out. And then the remastered version.
Yeah.
To see if there's any real differences. I mean, aside from the remastering, there's really no differences. Not like the way the music from The Elder was.
Well, that was a whole different thing. I mean, that was remastered, resequenced, and
yeah,
you know, a different mix.
Big deal thing. But yeah, it's an interesting one. Like I said, I don't necessarily, it's not my go-to Kiss record.
No. I don't think it's anybody.
But if Lick It Up comes up on the radio, I will stick around to listen.
Yeah, you it's know. Not like Detroit Rock City or Rock and Roll All Night where they really beat it into the ground. They may
beat it into the ground in the States, but in Canada, I Was Made for Loving You constantly.
Wow. Just you don't hear here.
That one I don't understand. Like, why is this one the one that's going to last the longest? Like, if I hear Detroit Rock City, it's like, oh, this is an anomaly. Okay, I have to stick around and listen. It's either that.
See, that's the opposite. Lick It Up. Rock and Roll Night and Detroit Rock City are like the top two songs you're most likely to hear Kiss songs on classic radio in the U.S.
Occasionally, we get Domino on like one of our classic rock stations.
If I heard that on rock stations around here, it was back in the 90s when it came out.
Yeah.
When it was relevant, you know, when it was new. But yeah, it's, you know, it's a solid record. It really kind of paved the way for them to make their big 80s comeback. They're, you know, the 80s will be kind of peaks and valleys, shall we say, for the band.
Oh, there's more valleys than peaks.
Yeah.
Like, and for me, it's like, Lick It Up is like, at least in terms of the non-makeup material, it's near at the top of the heap. But I'm a big Revenge fan. For me,
that's the gold standard.
Yeah,
that's the difference between when you have like a Bob Ezrin producing it, someone who's going to push.
Yeah,
you know, Michael.
This record sets the standard for what ends up happening with Animal Eyes and Crazy Nights.
In a style.
And which?
Asylum.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, I skipped Asylum. How could I skip Asylum? Oh, right. Because half the tracks on that are forgettable. Oddly enough, they're all the Gene tracks.
We're starting to notice a trend here. And Gene's output will be... And you can kind of see why Paul was pissed off at him. Because, he talked about Animal Eyes in his book. And he said Gene basically crapped out a bunch of demos and then took off to make Runaway.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gene is starting to, his attention is starting to waver a bit. He's starting to put his foot into different waters, you know, making movies. Now he can do it, and he'll do it all right. And, you know, but, you know, like Paul say, he'd be in the studio, and he'd be sitting behind the board with his nose in a the latest issue of Variety.
Yeah.
Where he'd be taking phone calls and or taking off early. Or, you know, they said in one instance he came in for a session and he'd been up all night producing a band, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's Kiss Look It Up, 40 years. I mean, it's scary to think that, you know, I can remember because I was starting my senior year in high school. And I remember buying it at Stewart's Department Store, which is next to the supermarket I worked at. You know, boy, I have a mind like a steel trap. Can't remember my password, though, to get on this, to get on Zoom. Lee, where are you on the internet? What are you up to these days, and where can people find you?
Well, if you decide to frequent Instagram anywhere around there, if you like fun cartoon artwork or anything like that, I can be found at LC the Draw Guy on Instagram as well as Facebook. And I share a lot of my fun artwork that I do there. Some might be Kiss related. You never know. You just have a look and see. But you can also find our back catalog for Kistry Science Theater. If you just Google that, you will find all the places of where we exist. We still have our complete back catalog available on most streaming platforms, as well as the Scrappy-Doo Principle, which I do with my co-host, Gilbert Da Silva, where we discuss things of pop culture nature, things that we watched as kids and revisit to see if they still have that magic as adults, and hilarity ensues. So Google search both of those and you'll find some fun.
As someone who's been a Kiss fan since 1977, I can tell you that if you have a sense of humor and you're a Kiss fan, you owe it to yourself to check out Kistry Science Theater. One episode, I think I told you this before, that really had me laughing hysterically was the one where, what if Disney bought Kiss? I remember driving in my car and almost like wanted to go off the road because I was laughing so hard. These guys, you know, you guys know what you're talking about. You take it seriously, but at the same time, you have a lot of fun with it. You guys do imitations. You did some Paul Stanley during the show, this show. And, you know, it's a lot of fun if you're a Kiss fan. There's a ton of episodes, and occasionally the guys branch off and do like little side casts where they talk about wrestling or David Bowie. But the bulk of those episodes is Kiss, and you won't be disappointed if you're a Kiss fan with a sense of humor. I have to emphasize that.
The whole point of the show was to present it as fans and have discussions as fans.
And that's what it comes off as. You know, it's not like three guys who are elitists or setting themselves above the audience. Like, you guys are the audience, and you don't try to like pretend. Like I said, that's a lot of fun. And you know, next year we've got some interesting anniversaries coming up. The 50th anniversary of the first two records, Analyze 40. So,
oh god, it's 50 years.
Yes, the first two records, Kiss and Hotter Than Hell. So I think we're definitely going to have to maybe do some special shows, and we'll have to reconvene, and maybe we'll get Matt back for a special show and talk about those records. But I definitely want to do like a 50th anniversary, maybe like combine the first two albums into a show and just have a general discussion. Well, who knows what formerly Animalize is turning 40.
Yeah. I'm hoping maybe that, you know, fingers crossed, there is one member of KST that is going to be going to the farewell. The end of the road.
Yeah.
Show here in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Right.
Which I think will be happening in November, I think.
Yep.
So someone from our team is going there.
Well, maybe that'll prompt a reunion episode where you
maybe, fingers crossed, we'll see.
Maybe. I mean, you know, you guys, I mean, the website's still up, and, you know, so there's always hope.
There's always hope, yeah.
And with that, Lee, I want to thank you for agreeing to coming back to do the show. It's always a lot of fun. We always have a great time talking about Kiss.
Kiss is fun. It's a band that has so much rich history and can be discussed ad nauseum. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
My pleasure, my friend. And with that, we end this episode of Mr. K Super Show. And we'll see you next time where me and somebody else will talk about something else. Who knows? Who knows where it'll go? Take care, everybody.
Take care, everybody. It's been a blast.
That's what you're going to get on Kistry Science Theater, folks. Check it out.
Make sure you tune in to the next episode.
You're good, but you know Ken Mills.
Yeah, Ken does do better than I do.
My father, we love you. You've been listening to Mr. K's Super Show. If you like what you heard, please write a review on Apple Podcasts and share it on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever social media you like. Thank you for listening to Mr. K's Super Show.